Digital Salon Season 3.
Postcards and war times. What do the notion of war and the role of the postcard have to do with each other in times of crisis? The first thing that comes into mind is morale boosting purposes. However, the availability and use of postcards were inevitably affected by the war circumstances at all times, and in reality of the conflict, the war definitely affected the content of cards. Perhaps, specifically during the war, the roles of the cards in the public domain are more than ever visible as artifacts of shared political and social space among the people of any country. First and foremost, postcards are always used for communication. Communication with soldiers in the wartime. They are a thread of connection with the loved ones serving on the front lines. They carry personal messages, convey news, and bring encouragement and hope to those suffering under the bullets. Some people use depicted landscapes, photographs, and stolen artifacts from occupied territories to capture and souvenir their experiences. Along these lines, war photography developed into its own genre. Postcards continue to be used to distribute war-related images to the general public, and they show the impact of the war on cities, including distractions and military activities. During wartime, especially in the context of dictatorships, propaganda and military regimes impose strict censorship and restrictions to prevent the dissemination of sensitive information and limit the distribution of it. In the case of the current selection of cards, however, we see repetitive patterns that depict the Great Patriotic War for more than 50 years, with new cards depicting the same event more and more often. Cards selected for the episode are all dedicated to the Victory Day, a national holiday that celebrates the victory of the Red Army and Soviet people over Nazi Germany in what has been known on the territory of the Soviet Union as the Great Patriotic War of 1941-1945.
We have many small postcards, and there are other postcards from the late 40s, and the thing I don't mention yet, that from 1945 to 1963, there were many postcards which with Stalin, and this was not about just okay, there was a war and we won a war. It was Stalin the one because we win. No, this postcard, I choose this because it's about not a celebration, but if we remember that at that time and try to remember this the event with heroes, the only hero, it was Stalin, you know? And because of them, there were no such celebration like years ago, because he actually was afraid of possible military alternative for his power. And the meaning of I forgot the word, veteran.
Veteran.
Veteran. The meaning of the veteran of the war. This expression was not very meaningful at that time.
It's interesting because to what you said about Stalin, that from 45 until 48, the day of the victory was a non-working day, and the signature was signed on the 23rd, like the signature was given on the 23rd of December of 1947, when it stopped being the kind of the non-working, the holiday, yes, the public holiday. And instead of that, they made the new year. And there is a gossip, like a rumor that was from, like, that was from Stalin, was that the kind of the like, even if that's, I don't know, we cannot talk about gossips, but if that's like the idea that was tied to that kind of counter power fear on the part of Stalin, right? So that it stops being, because it says that then it became a holiday only with Brezhnev from 65, and the card that we have is from 66.
In the 90s, it was really interesting how the celebration of Victory Day was continued, because for the whole Soviet history, there were only four military parades on Red Square in the 1945, the Victory Parade in the 1965, which I mentioned, in the 1985 on the 40th anniversary, and in the very end of the Soviet Union in the 1990. But as you know, Victory Parade take place every year in nowadays Russia. It's very unusual. It's very for my students, they are really surprised when I told them that there were no every year Victory Parade in Soviet Union. Why it became so important for the nowadays Russia? Because it's like the only the most the only chain, the only connection between generations, between people around Russia, which were traumatized of Soviet Union's collapse, and this celebration in the 90s begin to be celebrated very, very, I think, in a postmodern way, because what we could see in these postcards from 1999, we could see the words "День Победы," the Victory Day, but the new Russia symbols. And if these symbols were in the World War II, these symbols were the symbols of the people who doesn't agree with the Bolsheviks, who fight with the Soviet Union on the side with Hitler. I talk about such people who know such a collaborance in the history of World War II. And it's a kind of a really postmodern, because it's like when you, I don't know how to explain, it's like we
asked what is this color, and the color is black, but we talk white, you know. It's окей, супер взаимоисключающие вещи. Ну, то есть это либо то, либо другое, но здесь это соединяется и некритично в итоге в сознании усваивается как что-то.
Our parents continue speaking about the World War II, but they use a different term. My mom speaks about it all the time. She calls it the Great Patriotic War, because then the victory is associated with the Soviet Union only, reducing the role of other allies. Yes, they call it the Great Patriotic War. The Great Patriotic War is a term used in Russia and some other countries to refer to the conflict fought between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany during the World War II. It was first used in the Soviet propaganda in 1941, shortly after the German invasion of the Soviet Union. The term patriotic refers to the idea that the war was a struggle for the survival and independence of the Soviet Union and its people, and was intended to rally support for the war effort and to evoke feelings of patriotism and national pride among the Soviets. The conflict was framed as a patriotic struggle to defend the motherland against the invading forces of Nazis, and a defense of the socialist ideas of the Soviet state, and it became a central theme in the Soviet propaganda and ideology. Today, the term Great Patriotic War Soviet states to refer to the conflict fought during the World War II. These links and connections open up the theme of propaganda and its influence on a personal level, while also pointing to the critical analysis of the subject matter, the relationship and dividing political views towards the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Under the pressure of the crisis and the urgency of the situations, many families have split into three camps: those who support Putin's politics with the military operation resulting from it, those who refrain from political comments and seemingly do not take any position and stay apolitical, and those who radically oppose the war. Considering that the conflict has drastically changed everyone's life since the winter 2022, the zone of neutrality in many families has become unattainable. Touching upon this subject, one of the recent films by Andrei Loshak, Broken Ties, Razryv Svyazi, depicts the explicit breakage of family bonds. The film depicts how parents sever contact with their children, wives part from their husbands, sisters fall apart with their brothers. Points of diversion in people's opinions happens along many lines. Clash of lifestyle set in specific conditions, generational differences, and the lack of access to information and alternative media for many people. Most critically, however, one thing becomes excruciatingly clear. In a society where propaganda has penetrated every aspect of life, often kinship gives cracks under the unbearable pressure of imposed reality placeholder. In this context, as an innocent visual device, the postcard becomes an interesting lens that allows observing the line of thought that propaganda sets forth for the people. Postcard, as a multifaceted communication device, does not limit itself to a patriotic gaze towards nationhood's unique features and special role in pictorial language. It also integrates nation assertion and problematic politically charged rhetoric through the textual form. Thereby, a postcard becomes central to the episode and goes from personal to the public, and vice versa, in understanding the propaganda's mechanisms.
Of this program, and I've got two brilliant guests. One of them is Andrei Loshak. He is the author of this book, Broken Ties.
Because, and I share it with those people in our audience who have not seen the movie. The whole movie is about pairs. One person is on one side and the other person is on the other side. The views are absolutely opposite. So how did you find those pairs? How did you get acquainted with them?
Take a step forward towards her mother, and then what was amazing to me in this story, these are so different. These bubbles are so kind of different. You know, this is involving this film, the subject of the film. We live in such different information bubbles that a person, who has a husband, a daughter, and there is a family on the other side who are pro-war, pro-Putin, and everything that's happened there. And then the information bubble, the news didn't get there that the film has actually been published, that this is an open access, it's kind of, it's a public domain.
Only then they will be able to understand what kind of horror they take part in, and they will start
fighting back or running away, but so far I cannot see it. But so far they go to slaughter like slaves.
Postcards from Ukraine.
Hi, my name is Olena. I'm an architect who comes from Kyiv, Ukraine. I recently found the project, which is called The Postcards of Ukraine, and I wanted to express my opinion that these kind of small little interventions, small projects like this are very important these days. They're very important, first of all, to memorize and document the actions and the destructions that Russian army and Russian leaders are doing against Ukraine. So postcards of Ukraine are like 80 postcards which documents the destructions that have been made to Ukrainian cities, villages, buildings, cultural buildings, homes, streets, and they are a good documentation of the war crimes that are happening right now and already since one.
Postcards from Ukraine is a social and cultural project organized by Ukrainian Institute. It features a series of cards that depict numerous cultural heritage sites in Ukraine that have been affected by the full-blown war initiated by Russia. Each card is a collage-like image with a page torn in two right in the middle of the card, with each respective site featuring the heritage site before the destruction and after. Numerous cards feature architectural monuments such as the Palace of Culture, cathedrals, museums, university buildings, historically significant sites, public squares, archaeological sites, memorials, as well as wildlife territories, zoos and national parks.
The war which Russia started against Ukraine is a war not for territories. This is a war not against NATO. This war is against Ukrainian identity, that this war is against everything which is Ukrainian, against Ukrainian culture, against Ukrainian people, against Ukrainian history. And these postcards are a good reminder and documentation that what they're fighting with is Ukrainian culture as a whole thing, and they're trying to eliminate it as a whole. So those postcards are showing destroyed universities, destroyed schools, destroyed churches, destroyed sport facilities, basically everything which was making our history, our past, our culture, our present, our future, and they want to delete this future for us. And it's very important to remember what exactly happened and who did it in order to eliminate the possibility of propaganda later say, I don't know, we did it to ourselves or something. That's what they say right now. And yeah, those projects are important these days. And you know, when I think about the format of postcard, I'm thinking like, when you're in Europe or somewhere traveling, you know, you're sending to your friends like nice postcards from the places you're visiting and saying, oh look, I've been here, been there, this is how it feels, this is what the atmospheres of the city and so on. And this is very sad what Russian army is doing to our cities right now, because the postcards of our places which we could send from Ukraine to our European friends or all over the world, these places are destroyed. I don't know what we're gonna send soon, after, I don't know when the war will be finished, but when it will be finished, what will be left there? Will there be a nice opera theater to send a picture with? Will there be a Andreevsky Uzviz or cathedrals, all the beautiful, vibrant streets, what will be left? And this is this thought that so many things can be destroyed makes me very worried and makes me very sad. But we are documenting everything, and we will rebuild the future of Ukraine. We'll rebuild Ukraine, and the memory won't be destroyed.
Whatever stored in memories may not become memory itself. It is painful to see the destruction that the current war, reinforced by the propaganda narratives around the Great Patriotic War, has brought to the Ukrainians and their land. The postcard and its role in urban, social and political space, with this project in focus, opens up like a completely different information device. Distributed in urban territories, going from hand to hand, shared and kept as souvenirs by generations, these cards become historical pieces of evidence of changing political systems and historical eras. Perhaps, specifically during the war, the roles of the cards in the public domain are more than ever visible as artifacts of shared political and social space among the people of any country.
This podcast is brought to you by the Digital Salon Editorial Board. Danielle Honzalek, Rebecca Smith, Olivia Arena, and Dawa Tikin, in conjunction with UCLA's City Lab and Urban Humanities Initiative. We would like to thank Gus Wendell, Jacqueline Barrios, Dana Cuff, Gustavo Leclerc, Rain Laborde Ruiz, Martin Brennan, and everyone else who made this podcast possible. We would also like to thank our peer reviewers for their time and dedication, Charles Livermore, M. Marinoff, Jacqueline Barrios, Mario Ceballos, Shane Rayner Roth, and those who wish to remain anonymous. Thanks for listening to the Digital Salon podcast. New episodes are released every Thursday. We hope to see you then.